gentlemen, start your engines.
You tell me that about.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I'm not a crook.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan.
You're listening to Jim Paris Live, your source for the latest news on money, politics, prophecy, and preparedness. And now your host, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com and the author of more than 30 books, Jim Paris.
All right, welcome to our guest segment, one of the most fascinating topics we have ever covered on this show, the mystery of the Shroud of Turin. Could this actually be the burial cloth that Jesus Christ was wrapped in after his crucifixion? Joining us to discuss this is an expert on the Shroud of Turin. He's a graduate of St. Louis University with a bachelor's degree in theological studies, and he's been studying and writing about the Shroud of Turin for almost 45 years. Joseph Marino, good to have you with us, sir. Great to have you back.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be with you tonight.
Hey, so it sounds like you might be on a speaker, if possible. If you could get closer to it or pick up your handset, that would help us so we don't miss, we don't want to miss a single word. Now, we are going to get into some breaking news, some new developments on the Shroud of Turin. But for those of you not familiar with the Shroud of Turin, we're going to start by just giving a little bit of a background and a little bit of an overview, what I might call Shroud of Turin for dummies, and I include myself in that, to just get a little bit of an update. So, Joseph, tell us, for those not familiar, those who have been living under a rock, what exactly is the Shroud of Turin?
Well, it's a long linen cloth. It's about 14 and a half feet long by 3.5 feet wide. And it has the front and back images of a man who appears to have been crucified. And one can easily discern a wound in the side, some puncture wounds in the head, scourge marks all over the body. And in short, the man appears to have all the wounds that are mentioned in the four Gospels.
And one of the things to me that is the most fascinating about the Shroud of Turin is the, and I don't know the exact term for this, but the appearance of like a negative image. And what happens is when photographed, it becomes a positive. In fact, there is, it's very popular. It's shared all over social media, especially around Easter. This face, which could very well be the face of Jesus Christ, which is captured by a camera taking a picture of the negative exposure on the cloth. Talk about that image. And what is what we're seeing, could that actually be the face of Christ as that appears? Is that how that works, that the camera takes a picture and then it becomes a positive of a negative?
Yeah, in the case of the shroud, you know, many people only see the face of the shroud, pictures on the internet, but it's important to realize that it's the full front and back images. But as I say, most of the time, most people just see the face. But in any event, in 1898, you know, the image to the naked eye is not that clear. As I said, you can make out some of the wounds, you can tell it's a man, and various features. But Secundo Pio was an Italian lawyer in 1898, and the shroud was brought out for an exhibition to celebrate a royal wedding, because it was owned by the House of Savoy at that point. And, you know, photography was only about 30 years old at the time, and Secundo Pio was an amateur photographer and was enlisted to take some pictures of the shroud. And so he kind of, he did take full body images, but he also took some just of the face. And when he did the one of the face, he said he almost dropped the plate, because it looks kind of vague to the naked eye. But when you take a picture and you get your negative out, it pops out real lifelike. In other words, like a positive. So in effect, those of us that remember photography before digital came along, you know, you would take a picture and you'd get your negatives, and you look at the negatives and you couldn't hardly tell what it was. You'd say, who's that? And,
right.
You know, you really couldn't until the pictures were printed and became positive. And then you say, oh, yeah, that's what we actually took the picture of, but the negatives look different. So he was shocked and he almost dropped the plate. So, and in fact, the shroud image is like a photographic negative, which is one of the amazing characteristics of it that lead a lot of people to believe that it's authentic.
Now, just for people that are listening that may not be Christians, because we have a very wide audience here, this artifact is of interest to people that are Christians, of course, but also for people that are not Christians. This is legitimately an artifact of great interest across all religious belief systems. Isn't that right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The shroud's both an archaeological / scientific object, and it's also, because of its supposed association with Jesus, it's obviously a religious and spiritual object as well. But where you run into some problems is that some of the scientists and archaeologists that study it may be atheists. And so they get a little uncomfortable with saying this matches to Jesus. So they kind of make you jump through hoops and to try to come up with a reason that it might not be Jesus. But in reality, even if it's a forgery, you'd have to say that the forger was intending to try to make it look like Jesus, because no one else fits the description and wounds that we see on the shroud.
Right, including the crown of thorns, isn't that right?
It's actually more of a cap of thorns, because the punctures kind of cover the whole top of the head. We're so used to the Christian art that show sort of like a circlet of thorns. That's
right.
Just, artistic tradition. And, you know, you kind of realize that a Roman soldier isn't going to take the time to weave a nice little circlet crown. He's just going to get a bush of thorns and smack it on the top of the head. That's what we see on the shroud.
And those are some of the unique things, the puncture in the side, which is discussed in the Gospels, the crown of thorns. What about the piercings? Where on the body was the body nailed to the cross? Where were those nails?
In art, we usually see for the hands, we usually see it through the palms, because the English translation of the Gospels usually say hands. But the Greek word encompasses both the hand and the wrist. And anatomically, we know that you have to put the nail through the wrist, because that's the only place that's strong enough to hold it to the cross. As far as the feet go, they're not exactly sure, because part of the image is kind of cut off at the bottom of the cloth. They're not exactly sure how many nails were used. It could have been as many as three, depending on if it went through the top of the foot or the heel. There's probably, as I say, one, two, or three nails in the feet. We're not exactly sure.
Now, there's a lot of different reasons why probably we could say that studying the shroud is important. But the one thing that, we've had a lot of people on the show over the years to talk about the historical proof of the life of Jesus Christ, because there is a lot of people today that don't believe that a man by the name of Jesus Christ that lived in Nazareth, that this person ever existed. So when you start with that premise that there wasn't anyone that ever lived that was Jesus, it's very easy to dismiss his ministry. But once you can prove that he actually lived, of course, you still have to make a decision. Do you believe that he was the Son of God? Do you believe that he was resurrected? Do you believe that the stories in the gospel are accurate? So there's still a lot of faith that you must have and a lot of research that you must do. But if you dismiss the existence of the man, then you don't have to think through those other questions. I believe that studying the shroud is significant because it establishes that there was this person who was crucified as described in Scripture. Now, what people do with that information, a million different directions people can go with that, but it at least brings to the table a question of what will you do with this information about this real person who was really crucified. Now, from your standpoint, as both a believer as well as someone that has studied the shroud, how what do you say is the most important reasons that we're studying the shroud?
I think that's an important point you brought up about just in the last, I'd say, 10 years or so, the amount of so-called scholarship that purports to show that Jesus never existed is just mushroomed. And I think it points out the fear factor of what, you know, Jesus's message was. I mean, you never hear anybody say, oh, I wonder if Caesar, Julius Caesar existed or Alexander the Great. No, that's not a problem because none of those guys talked about eternal life and what happens when you die. But Jesus did. And so you have this backlash, I think, of people saying, oh, he really didn't even exist. And then that way you don't have to, as you say, deal with the issues that come from that. And so you get so many people, including a lot of those scientists and archaeologists, I think, that I mentioned, when they see a shroud that seems to match to the historical Jesus of Nazareth, if they're not Christian, they say, oh, it's got to be a forgery, because their worldview won't let them say that it's Jesus, because some people are so scared of it that they just take the farthest route and say, oh, well, Jesus never existed. And that solves the problem for them. Some are braver and say, okay, Jesus did exist, but I don't necessarily believe he was the Son of God or resurrected. You do get the whole gamut of reactions. But I think the existence of the shroud does point to, I mean, you can never, I always want to say up front when I talk to people about the shroud, is we can never really prove it 100%. You can get pretty darn close, I think. The last little bit that you can't prove, I think you have to do by faith, which I think is a good thing because, I mean, that's the nature of faith. God doesn't give us 100% knockdown proof of anything. He wants us to have faith, and that went for the resurrection event, and that goes for the shroud. So people have to make up their mind what it means, but I think it does show the historical existence of Jesus, and it's really a photographic record in some ways of his passion, death, and possibly his resurrection. Now, we don't know what happened at the resurrection, but I always feel comfortable saying there seems to be some connection between the image that we see on the shroud and the event that we call the resurrection.
Because it's almost impossible, even in present day science, there is no way to create that image today, even with our current laser technology and all those things that we have today. And there's not enough power. I have read there's not enough power on the earth that could power a laser that could create that image that is on that cloth. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Wow.
Yes.
And so what we're left to think is, okay, so whoever this person was has all of these injuries as described in the Gospels. And then there is this image that is burned on there with this incredible power that we don't even know that we couldn't replicate today. And the claim is that he was resurrected. And we have the cloth and we have the picture of him in the cloth, but of course we don't have the body and we have something happened. And so that's where people have to start deciding what they're going to think about that. And for those interested, just type in the historicity of Jesus and you'll find that even among atheists, scholars of archaeology will agree. History professors will agree that there was a man named Jesus. It's largely accepted. We have had Gary Habermas on many times. We've also talked about Bart Ehrman's books about the historicity of Jesus Christ. So we know that he lived, which then creates this uncomfortable question for people, which is what they're going to do with his life. Are they going to respond to his message or not? And that's something people will have to decide to do. But it's easy to dismiss the whole thing if you say he didn't exist. Now, what about all of these claims, Joseph, that the shroud is a fake, that supposedly there was a carbon dating test that was done on it and it proved it was too recent? It couldn't have been at the time of Jesus.
Yeah. Well, carbon dating, people have to remember the method itself was only invented like in the 40s, and then it was adapted. It needed a rather large size when it first started in the 40s. So in the early days, when people wanted the shroud dated, they would have required like a handkerchief size piece. And that was obviously too large. The church, you know, declined to do it. And then in the late 70s, a new method called accelerator mass spectrometry was invented. And you could date a piece of linen just with, you know, a few threads. So people started, you know, lobbying the Vatican for that test. And in 78, a group of mostly American scientists had done a multidisciplinary examination of the shroud. And since carbon-14 is destructive, they couldn't do it. And it had only been invented the year before that, so it was still too early anyway. They had the shroud for 5 days, 120 straight hours, did the best science and technology available at that time. They spent 3 years collating the data. They wrote up papers in 24 scientific, peer-reviewed scientific journals and wrote a summary statement and said that there was real blood on the cloth, and their main mission had been to find out how the image got on the cloth, and they actually failed in that part. And they said that the image was not the product of an artist. Well, in 1984, they sent the Vatican another proposal for another round of multidisciplinary tests, but this time including the C14 test. And in July 1985, Cardinal Ratzinger, who later became Pope Benedict XVI, at the time, he was like maybe the third highest ranking cardinal, something like that. He approved STIRP, their work proposal for the 26 tests, including the C14. And that made a lot of sense because STIRP had the most experience with the shroud and knew the most about it. Well, there were various C14 labs wanted to get in on the C14 test to get a lot of publicity for their labs and their new method. And a workshop was held in Turin in late September, early October 1986 to plan how this C14 test would go. And it's just kind of mind-boggling. I have a book called the 1988 C14 dating of the Shroud of Turin, a stunning expose. I've got 800 pages there, and I've got an additional 80 entries on a website page that I dedicated to overflow. And somewhere along the line, somebody was able to go over Cardinal Ratzinger's head and get that approval rescinded. And STIRP was knocked out of the 26 tests. They were knocked out of any involvement in the C14 test. And they changed all the protocols from the workshop meeting in 1986. They were supposed to originally ticket from like three or four different spots on the Shroud. They were supposed to use like seven labs, and ultimately they reduced it to three labs and one spot on the corner of the Shroud, which all the experts that said, do not take it from this corner. This corner has been cut on before. It may have been repaired. Do not take it from this corner. Guess where they took it from? That corner.
Hmm. So there's a lot of reasons to doubt that, and that's in your 800-page book. That this is there any thoughts of getting a more up to date, like right now, a carbon dating on it? Now that we have, of course, better technology, and there would be obviously better controls in place.
Not at this time. I've got sources in Turin and in Rome. And they tell me that no testing will probably happen while Pope Francis is still alive. And it's, you know, I mean, the science and technology has actually advanced to the degree that we actually have other dating tests, besides the carbon-14. And I have a feeling if they do another dating test, they probably won't do that one because of, you know, obviously the previous problems with that one, but that they might attempt. There was an Italian professor in Padua that did three different type of dating tests based on chemical and mechanical degradation of cloth. And he said that his results showed that the cloth probably dated between 200 BC and 200 AD, which would put it in the time frame of Jesus in the first century.
Wow. Fascinating. Now, I don't want to lose people by getting too deep into the science. And what I want to do right now is to give people a chance to call in with their own questions. So if you're listening on one of our audio streams, the number in the United States, so if you're outside of the U.S., you'll just need to get to a U.S. exchange, and then you'll go to area code 646-716-4041. The number is 646-716-4041. We'll take callers first, and then we'll start reading some of these questions coming in over Facebook and also over email. The email is jim@christianmoney.com. And again, the phone number is 646-716-4041. If you're watching on one of our video streams, the number is in the lower corner of your screen. And somebody wants to know who has the Shroud right now and who has had it throughout history. Do we know who the custodians have been of the Shroud all the way from the time of the death of Jesus?
Well, it's currently owned by the living Pope. So let me start, you know, in our current time and move backwards. As I mentioned, in 1898, there was a royal wedding. It was owned by the House of Savoy. The last king of Italy, who was the last ruling member of the House of Savoy, died in 1983. And in his will, he willed it to the living Pope, and that took effect in 1985. So the living Pope is the current owner of the Shroud. Before that, it was owned by Margaret of Austria in the 13th century. We only know exactly where it's been since about 1357, when it showed up in France. Now, before that, there's other clauses in history that the Shroud may be equated with. And there's something called the Image of Edessa, and there was another cloth, and then it became the Mandylion when it was in Constantinople. So we have, even though we don't have a documented, unbroken documented history, we have a pretty good idea of where it could have been pre-1350 all the way back to the first century. I would recommend any of Ian Wilson's books that you can find on Amazon to look at the history a little closer, or you can see a timeline.
If you're just tuning in, folks, I just want to give people an update. If you're just tuning in, we have a lot of people joining us about every 15 minutes. We are discussing the mystery of the Shroud of Turin. Our guest is Joseph Marino. We're taking your calls right now at 646-716-4041. And on this topic, someone is asking, what is the church's position on it? I think they're probably, the implication is probably they're asking about the Catholic Church's position on it, which I would like to know. And also, what does the Evangelical Church, think of this? It's funny because we don't really hear much discussion about the Shroud in evangelical circles, at least I don't. Is that because it's a Catholic artifact that the evangelicals aren't all that interested in it? And does the Catholic Church believe that it is the burial cloth of Jesus?
Yeah, you're spot on with the evangelical point of view. A lot of people just dismiss it because it's of its association with the Catholic Church. But there are a lot of evangelicals who have taken the time to study it themselves that find the evidence so compelling that it supersedes their distaste for, Catholic relics. The Catholic Church basically calls it an icon. They kind of use ambiguous language, to be frank. I wrote a whole article on this, which is on academia.edu, and I list all the different pronouncements that have been made by popes and the cardinals of Turin since the 1350s. But basically, the Catholic Church never defines or pronounces on the authenticity of a relic. What they do is, if they know that something's a fake, they will not promote it or allow it to be venerated. If they think it could be authentic, or the evidence definitely doesn't disprove it, they will allow Catholics to venerate it. And so the church does allow Catholics to venerate the Shroud, meaning they certainly don't believe the 1988 results, because if they had believed them, they would have said, okay, science has proved that the Shroud's a fake, therefore, you should not venerate it. But that hasn't happened. So they leave it open to the faithful. It's what I call sometimes a sacramental. It's something that helps us bridge the gap between us and God.
Yeah, it's certainly fascinating. And I'm going to hit you with one more question from a listener, and then I want you to take our last few minutes to give us any updates or what we can expect in 2022, anything new that you want to get into. So someone is asking about the Knights Templar and their association with the Shroud.
Yeah, it's believed by a lot of historians that the Knights Templar had it. It was the cloth that had been called the Mandylion was in Constantinople from 944 to about 1204, and then it disappeared during the Fourth Crusade, and then it kind of disappeared for about 150 years until it reappeared in France in the 1350s. And some historians believe that it was during that missing period of about 150 years that the Knights Templar, which was a group of kind of warrior monks, and they went to the Holy Land and we're looking for the cup of the Last Supper and such things. It's believed they may have had it. There are some references in their literature to people worshiping, the head of a double, double images and worshiping a head and stuff, which some historians think might be the Shroud. But the history for that is still somewhat speculative. Another new book came out recently called, I think it's The Hidden History of the Shroud by Jack Marquardt, Markwardt. You can find his book on Amazon.
Now tell us, going into this year, I'm on your email list, and it's almost every day you have something new to share, or new articles that are being published, new findings. How active is the study of the Shroud? It seems like there's a lot going on, and it seems like it's accelerating. What are some of the things happening now and that we can expect in 2022?
Yeah, this year is going to be pretty busy. despite the COVID issue. A nonfiction just came, book came out that I emailed about recently, and I'm expecting there's at least six more nonfiction books in the pipeline that I'm aware of that are supposed to be out this year. And then there's also supposed to be a volume of a fiction series, Shroud Fiction series, three parts. One part is expected out this year. There's going to be a new film by Englishman David Rolfe to come out at Easter. It's called Who Can He Be? His site is whocanhebe.com. Oh, in February, the Museum of the Bible is having an interactive Shroud exhibition, and they're having two events on February 23rd and also February 26th. You can find more information at museumofthebible.org. And then the Taizé community of Europe, the youth of that community is going to get a special preview of the Shroud in July. It's been postponed twice previously because of COVID, and they've rescheduled it for July. And then we're trying to work with the Museum of the Bible to have a mini conference to be held at the end of the exhibit of July, and that's still in the planning stage. If that doesn't happen,
is that the one in Nashville, Joseph? Is that the one in Nashville?
No, that's they have a special. That's a different exhibit. The Museum of the Bible's in Washington D.C. It was made specifically for them.
Okay.
And it's going to be like a February to July, and it's really good. I saw a preview of it, and people can get a virtual ticket both for the February 23rd and the February 26th events. The 2022 is going to be pretty exciting, Shroud-wise.
We've got one more question coming in here. There's several, but one more that I think is a great one that I want to ask you. For people that want to get started in learning about the Shroud, this sounds like there's so much information. Whoops. Did I lose you?
No, I think, I'm sorry, that was probably just my email.
No worries. You've got mail. So for people that want to get started learning about the Shroud, there's probably nothing as crass as the Shroud for Dummies by that title. But they're asking, is there sort of a starter, a primer that you would point someone to that wants to get started learning about the Shroud?
That's a good question. My answer is going to probably give them more than I probably should give them. But if you go to shroud.com, you'll get more information than you'll ever need. Both from, you know, and it's got for the novice all the way up through the scholar. And just go to the homepage, shroud.com, and look at the homepage and see what it has to offer. And you'll be able to find whatever level of knowledge you're at with the Shroud or where you want to go. You will find tons and tons of material. And that's also got a great search engine. So if there's any particular aspect of the Shroud you want to investigate, you can put a term in the search engine and it'll just pull up from the website any articles or videos or whatever related to the question. So that, yeah, I would recommend shroud.com for everybody.
And as we close it out, thank you so much for giving us an update and just wonderful information. How can people follow you online if they want to follow your published articles and your appearances, those sorts of things? What is your website?
My website is www.homestead.com/newvistas. And Homestead and New Vistas are all one word. Probably the easiest thing to do, though, is if, as Jim mentioned, I have a email list that I send out updates about Shroud videos, articles, etc. If you email me, which is jmarino240@aol.com, I'll add you to my list, and you will be blind copied, so that your email is not shared, and you can ask to be removed from the list at any time. I don't get offended. So if you email me there, jmarino240@aol.com, and ask to be put on my Shroud email list, that's the best way to keep up with not only.
I want to make sure people have it. So it's your first initial, J, and then Marino, yes. M-A-R-I-N-O, the letter J, and then Marino, no spaces, jmarino240@aol.com. Is that right?
240.
Yep. jmarino240@aol.com. Joseph Marino, it is fascinating, fascinating as always. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
You're welcome, Jim. It was nice
all
to
right.
be with you.
God bless. Talk to you next time. Wow. If that doesn't give you chills, if that doesn't give you chills, I don't know what does. Whether you're a Christian or not, if you are not interested in what this cloth is, I don't know if you're still breathing. I mean, it's just fascinating. The Shroud of Turin, something we're probably going to do at least a couple times a year on this broadcast, because I am personally fascinated with everything to do with the Shroud of Turin. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been a great week. Stay warm wherever you are. Shovel the driveway if you're getting hit with snow. Get an extra cup of hot chocolate and keep yourself safe and warm. And we'll talk to you next time. Remember, if it's Sunday night, it's Jim Paris Live. So long, everybody.